Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 10, Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, Text Number 5. Naja Samudra Giraya,
Naja Samudra Giraya,
Savanaspati Virudha,
Savanaspati Virudha,
Phalantya Oshadhaya Sarvaha,
Phalantya Oshadhaya Sarvaha,
Kamam Anvritu Tasyavai, Samudra Girayaha Savanaspati Virudaha Phalantya Oshadhaya Sarvaha Kamam Amritu Tasyavai Nadyaha Rivers Samudraha Oceans Girayaha, hills and mountains, Savanaspati, vegetables, Virudha, creepers, Phalanti, active, Oshadayaha, drugs, Sarvaha, all, Kamam, necessities. Anvritu, seasonal, tasya, for the king, vai, certainly, the rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, and active drugs in every season paid their tax quota to the king in profusion. Purport. Since Maharaj Yudhisthira was under the protection of the Ajita, the infallible Lord, as above mentioned, the properties of the Lord, namely the rivers, oceans, hills, forests, etc., were all pleased. And they used to supply their respective quota of taxes to the king. The secret to success is to take refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. Without his sanction, nothing can be possible. To make economic development by our own endeavours on the strength of tools and machinery is not all. The sanction of the Supreme Lord must be there. Otherwise, despite all instrumental arrangements, everything will be unsuccessful. The ultimate cause of success is the Deva, the Supreme. Kings like Maharaj Yudhisthira knew perfectly well that the king is the agent of the Supreme Lord to look after the welfare of the mass of people. Actually, the state belongs to the Supreme Lord. The rivers, oceans, forests, hills, drugs, etc. are not creations of man. They are all creations of the Supreme Lord. And the living being is allowed to make use of the property of the Lord for the service of the Lord. Today's slogan is that everything is for the people, and therefore the government is for the people and by the people. What's that a reference to? Demon crazy. What's that a reference to? Anybody got an idea? The Constitution written for the United States. In fact, I think Lincoln wrote that. Abraham Lincoln. I read it in the Lincoln Memorial. when I was in Washington DC. But anyway, we'll come back to that. Today's slogan is everything is for the people, and therefore the government is for the people and by the people. But to produce a new species of humanity at the present moment, on the basis of God consciousness and perfection of human life, the ideology of godly communism, the world has to again follow in the footsteps of kings like Maharaj Yudhisthira or Parikshit. There is enough of everything by the will of the Lord, and we can make proper use of things to live comfortably without enmity between men or animal and man or nature. The control of the Lord is everywhere, and if the Lord is pleased, every part of nature will be pleased. The river will flow profusely to fertilize the land. The oceans will supply sufficient quantities of minerals, pearls and jewels. The forest will supply sufficient wood, drugs and vegetables, and the seasonal changes will effectively help produce fruits and flowers in profuse quantity. What's the word profuse mean? In abundance. In abundance. The artificial way of living, depending on factories and tools, can render so-called happiness only to a limited number at the cost of millions. You can only be happy if you've got an iPhone. A smartphone. Got to have a smartphone. If you haven't got a smartphone, then you're not happy. Since the energy of the mass of people is engaged in factory production, the natural products are being hampered, and for this, the mass is unhappy. Without being educated properly, the mass of people are following in the footsteps of the vested interests by exploiting natural reserves. Therefore, there is acute competition between individual and individual and nation and nation. There is no control by the trained agent of the Lord. We must look into the defects of modern civilization by comparison here and should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira to cleanse man and wipe out anachronisms. What's an anachronism?
Old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned, yes, that's true. But in this case, I don't think that's the context. I don't think that's the usage of the word. Anachronism. Something out of place. Yeah, in that sense, you know, something old-fashioned is out of place. But in this case, Prabhupada's actually recommending something that's old-fashioned. Let's go back to being ruled by the king. Right? That's basically what he's saying. Anachronism. Yeah. Something out of place. Om jnanatimirandasya gananjana salakaya chakshurum militam jena tasmaye sri guruve namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhuktale Svayam Rupa Kada Maheyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yakri Patamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatavinam. So, the secret to success. The secret to success. Prabhupada says here. And then he puts in italics, so this means this is important, is to take refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. That's the secret of success. And why is that the secret of success? As has been explained here. If the Lord is pleased with the performance of Jagya, because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, you know, the human life is basically meant for the performance of sacrifice. And then as a result of the performance of sacrifice, one will be endowed with all the necessities for life. Because sacrifice is meant to please, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, Jagya means Vishnu or sacrificial performances. Jagya means Vishnu or sacrificial performances. And we know that sacrificial performances are meant ultimately to please the Lord. And then if the Lord is pleased and the demigods are pleased, they're the administrators of universal affairs. When the demigods are pleased, then there will be an abundance of facilities provided for everybody. When and that's exemplified by these descriptions of Maharaj Yudhishthira's kingdom. And there are other descriptions in the Bhagavad Gita also, where the citizens lived in harmony with these principles of sacrifice. And then as a result, there is abundance. You know, in the next verse. And you see this in the Bhagavad Gita of Lord Ram's kingdom, where everybody was engaged in sacrifice, basically engaged in devotional service, and there was an acknowledgement of the proprietorship of the Lord. Then, you know, it's described how in Ram's kingdom you didn't have to die if you didn't want to. No? That'd be something everybody put their hands up for. No anxieties, no problems, no conflict, or very little conflict, and an abundance of material resources. Such that, you know, the weather is clement, not inclement, right? So it rains at the right time. It's not too hot, not too cold. And there's an abundance of everything. Based on this principle of taking refuge under the protection of the Lord. That's what sacrifice is all about. Jagya. Is to recognize that ultimately everything belongs to Krishna. Isavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatam jagat tena chaktena bunjita magridha svasya. What is it? Kasya sviddhanam. Everything, and this is explained in the Upanishad, beginning of the Upanishad. Everything, animate or inanimate, is ultimately controlled by the Lord. It's His. When we look at things, then we tend to see things in terms of I and mine. I, me, mine. Right? That was a song by the Beatles. I, me, mine. When George Harrison was, you know, associating with the devotees, and they wrote. In fact, did he write that song? I don't think so. You know, I, me, mine, I, me, mine, I, me, mine. All over the world. That's what people think. I, me, mine, I, me, mine. Well, certainly each one of us has an amount set aside as our quota. But acknowledgement of that quota is appropriate or is perfect when we recognize that, okay, I'm allowed a certain amount, but ultimately, who's allowing it? It's been my usage of this property is ordained by the Lord, but only so long as I use it in His service. This is the principle. You know, you can have, you know, and Prabhupada exemplifies this point, you know, in discussions with the devotees, and then he's talking about his watch. And he said, you know, everything belongs to Krishna. But this is my watch, and if you want to take it off me, I'll fight you for it. right? Because I'm using it in Krishna's service. Krishna has allowed me to have this facility, and so therefore it is mine, and it's mine to look after. But only so long as, and it's appropriate that I have proprietorship of these things, but only so long as I use them in the service of the Lord. And you know, there's an understanding in using things for Krishna. If we're using things for Krishna and for Krishna's purposes, then that means then automatically we should know, because Krishna consciousness means also that we're using them for the benefit of everybody else. Using things for Krishna's purposes ultimately means using them for the benefit of everyone. And in a society that's been recommended here, in the society of the saintly king, then the king makes sure that everybody is engaged with this proper understanding. The king appears to be the proprietor. He's in charge of everybody. But he's only valid in that position if he understands that, okay, the state is mine to look after, but it's only mine to look after because I understand that ultimately it belongs to Krishna. You know, the saintly kings. In fact, you know, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken for the benefit of the Kshatriyas, so that they would understand these principles. You know, who is the proprietor? Krishna is the proprietor. That doesn't mean that I can't utilize those things, but I should utilize them properly. Understanding well to whom they belong. This is the verse of that. This is the message of the Isavasyam verse. One shouldn't take those things from others, knowing well to whom they belong. So we recognize the proprietorship of others, understanding that Krishna is providing that facility for everyone. But in providing that facility for everyone, if we're to live in a state of abundance, then everybody has to use things appropriately, with the proper understanding that it all belongs to Krishna. When the citizens start to misappropriate the wealth, thinking that it belongs only to them, and you know, as a result, then you get the kind of society that we're living in now, where there's extreme competition. And you know, Prabhupada mentions basically the people are behaving like dogs and cats, and so there's tension. There's a great deal of tension between the citizens because they're competing for, and because they have that miserly mentality, then, and they're not worshipping Krishna, then there's not this abundance. Things are not, you know, resources are not profusely available. They're restricted. And then when the resources are restricted, then there has to be this competition. And that competition brings about animosity. And basically people descend into a very animalistic consciousness, is what's been described here. So basically they're barking at each other. Or, you know, when you see two dogs walking down the street, if they're old seasoned dogs, you know, they sort of, have you seen that? And dogs, when there's a young puppy and he doesn't know what's going on, he's just, but when they're older and they're more territorial, then they're very snarly and they snap at each other. Right? So people are like that. You see the way people, and especially, you know, you see in political affairs, there's a great deal of tension. There's not a mood of abundance, but there's a mood of, you know, this is my property and I'm going to protect it, in this idea of scarcity. And so you know, when the people's consciousness is degraded like that, it's very difficult to get them to change. They become degraded into this animalistic mentality. And of course, Prabhupada points out that it's very difficult to, it's impossible to preach to an animal, right? We can bring a dog into the room and we can tell him, you're not the body. And he'll sniff you and lick you. And Prabhupada says he's licking and sniffing you to tell what you're going to taste like after you're dead. He's going to eat you. So, you know, animalistic mentality is very difficult to conquer and overcome. Which is interesting because, you know, Prabhupada is recommending here a society where the leadership is based on Kshatriya qualities. You know, he's recommending we should have Kshatriyas who should lead society. But it's interesting, really, in our preaching, we don't emphasize this point. In fact, as with the establishment of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Prabhupada didn't actually emphasize the establishment of a Kshatriya, you know, class, if you like. And there's a reason for that, because the Kshatriyas are not the only piece in the puzzle, you know, in the jigsaw puzzle. More important than the Kshatriyas are the Brahmanas. Because the Kshatriya, a properly trained Kshatriya, would be taking advice from spiritual advisors, from the rishis and the sages and saintly persons. So, you know, the Kshatriya is not in isolation. It's not just having a Kshatriya. Kshatriya is important. But more important than the Kshatriya is the head of society, in the social body. The Kshatriya is analogous with the arms. But the arms are being directed, arms and legs are being directed by the head. And so more important is the position of the Brahmanas, the teachers, the educators, the philosophers, the spiritual scientists, if you like, whose job it is to educate everybody about these principles. Educate the Kshatriyas, educate the Vaishyas, educate the Sudras. And so that's why in establishing the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Prabhupada emphasized the establishment of a Brahminical culture, of a culture of learning, so that there would be a class of people within society who would be able to educate the others, especially the Kshatriyas, in this principle of Isavasya. That's what's missing, that this proper understanding of who actually is in charge and who actually controls and owns everything. You know, Prabhupada gives the example in the Isapanishad of the labourers. You know, the people are like the labourers or the workers on a building site who think that because they've built the building, then therefore it belongs to them. Actually, it belongs to the person, to the financier, the capitalist, the person who provided the funds to build it, pays their wages and so forth. And so they're fighting over something which actually doesn't belong to them. Which is what's going on in society now. People aren't conscious of the fact that God is the proprietor. They think, oh, we've dug it out of the ground, or we've chopped it out of the trees, or, you know, and so therefore it belongs to us. But this is misappropriation. They're thieves. It doesn't belong to them. It belongs to Krishna. And when we misappropriate and take things away from Krishna with the wrong mentality, then as a result of the workings of the laws of nature, we have to be punished. And one of the punishments that we experience is this the profusion, the abundance, it shrinks. And so there's not enough rain. You know, there's not enough the nourishment in the food and the vegetables. There's strife and conflict between, as Prabhupada says here, man and nature, man and the animals, man and man. And so the message is not so much that we should have a Kshatriya king. Certainly we should have a Kshatriya king, but the Kshatriya king properly qualified and properly led by a spiritual culture. And that's our responsibility. That is actually our job now. Can you believe it? Somehow we've unqualified. You know, I was just thinking this morning, I'm barely in the human species of life. What to speak of being a Brahmana? You know, closer to being a dog than a human being, if we look at our previous history anyway. Not much better than a dog. But somehow or other, by Krishna's arrangement and by Prabhupada's arrangement, we've been given the responsibility of understanding this spiritual culture, putting it into practice, and then teaching others. So as to establish this kind of a society. That's exciting, isn't it? It's certainly a challenge. How are we going to do that? But that's what's required. We need to understand these principles. That means we've got to become not animals, right? Because you can't preach to an animal, which is difficult in this day and age. You know, preaching means trying to find people who are actually not animals. And that's pretty hard. One of the interesting principles is that bhakti is independent. And so even if a person is tightly bound up by the laws of nature and is behaving like an animal, at least if they're in the human form of life, they've got ears. And if they're very, very fortunate, they get the opportunity to associate with the devotees, then they can actually hear the proper instructions. And somehow, you know, that message gets through. Even though they're behaving like animals, still, because they've got the human form of life and have that opportunity to hear, that's the greatest opportunity, to hear the spiritual sound vibration, which is free from defect. Even we may have some defect, but if we present that which is without defect, it'll have effect. That's potency. And when received by a soft heart, then it can liberate us from this. It does. It liberates us from this, from the bondage of material existence, from animal consciousness and animal culture, and elevates us. And so when we're fortunate and hear from the devotees, what is it? Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sava Sastra Koi, Lava Matra, Sava Siddhi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. Just one moment's association with the devotees can mean the success of life, even if we're in the most fallen condition, because we get to hear. And we get, out of that association, we get a higher taste, which piques our interest, and we want more. And once we have that interest, then it's our responsibility to take it on very, very seriously. That's what the real purpose of the human form of life is, not to enjoy our senses like the animals. This is basically modern society's understanding of things. We're here to enjoy, and that means eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Let's have fun. The only problem is, as Prabhupada points out, that fun is very, very short-lived. And it brings with it a great deal of suffering and anxiety, mental health issues and so on and so forth, social problems. You can see it. The enjoyment is flickering, limited and temporary, and it just brings upon us a huge amount of suffering. So, you know, the Vedas enjoy, don't waste the human form of life just pursuing sense gratification like an animal. Take advantage of the real opportunity that's afforded as a human being and elevate oneself. Get out of material existence and be firmly on the platform of spiritual identity, where the activities of the devotee, they're not material. Our activities are not at all material. When we perform our actions focused on, what is it? Taking refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. In other words, understanding Krishna is the proprietor. Radha Balabha is the proprietor. And I'm doing my service for their pleasure, then the activities are no longer material. You know, it mentions, it's mentioned in the Shastra that the devotees shouldn't be seen as ordinary material people, because they're not. The activities are on the spiritual, the activities that we perform are not on the material platform. They're on the spiritual platform, wholly and solely. Even we may not understand it. Huh? We may not appreciate it. We may think, oh, good, gotta go. You know, whatever it is that you've got to do today. Oh no, I've got to go to Crossways. Oh no, I've got to go on book distribution. In my day it was, you've got to go and wash the pots. And we have people who wash the pots for us now. But actually washing the pots is a very powerful activity that makes you focused. I want to get out of here as quick as possible. Stupid pots. But actually, I've mentioned this many times, I've had the greatest ecstasies in the pot shoot in my devotional career. So we shouldn't see our activities as being material, because they're not. When they're focused on pleasing Krishna and serving the devotees, then the activities are practically, that's the same activity that's performed in the Vaikuntha planets, the same activity that's performed in the spiritual world. It's just that our consciousness is still down around here in the animal loka. We've got to elevate it, get up and out of material existence. And we're actually doing it by being engaged by the mercy of the spiritual master, by Prabhupada, and mercy of the devotees, we're actually doing it. If we stick at it, then our consciousness will be elevated to that same level as well. Then we'll be setting an example. We are actually setting an example for society, and especially when we're fixed in that spiritual understanding, taking refuge of Krishna, and understanding he's the proprietor. I'm not the proprietor, nor the enjoyer. What is it? What is that verse? Last verse of the fifth chapter. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram. Is that the last verse of the fifth chapter? Yeah. Sarva loka maheshwaram. Sarva loka maheshwaram. He's the controller of all of the lokas, including Albert Park, 197 Dake Street. Especially out at part 197 Bank Street. Krishna is in charge around here. And we're working to serve him. Now, when we do that, and we are doing it, as we do that, we're establishing then a different kind of culture. the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, where we engage in devotional service. This is one of Prabhupada's, as Tamal Krishna Maharaj explains in his thesis, one of Prabhupada's Mahavakyas. The first one being Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, he's in charge of everybody. And then we do devotional service to Krishna. Prabhupada's translation of bhakti, basically. Devotional service. And then we establish a culture that's above and beyond this animal mentality, animalistic kind of mentality, where we see everything as Krishna's. Because we have to be careful about that, you know. Balaram was writing to Korma the other day and he was saying how they were proud that they didn't spend any of Krishna's money on the feast and the festival that they had for Lord Jagannath's appearance. Which meant that they basically pitched it. Or maybe they begged it, which is okay, that's fine. But, Korma mentions in the Transcendental Diary, or certainly he's mentioned to me, you know, in those days, basically, if it wasn't nailed down, then it belonged to Krishna. Which means the devotees then took it. So, you know, we've maybe advanced a little from those days. But still, the principle is the same, that we should recognize that Krishna is the proprietor and we should use everything for his service, and thereby establish the Krishna consciousness, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That's what it means, or one of the aspects of Krishna consciousness, along with the development of Brahminical culture. We don't have to steal things, people will give them to us, right? Brahmanas don't go and steal, don't need to. So, on that point, I might just read, you know, in my, it's interesting, Korma was writing to me and he was saying, you know, it's the anniversary of Lord Jagannath's appearance day, you've got to do something about it. And I was thinking, hang on a second, in all of my time in the temple, we never did anything, why all of a sudden? And of course, we recognise the Lord's appearance because we're worshipping him every day. But on this occasion, 40 years ago, at least according to the solar calendar, Lord Jagannath appeared. So I'm going to read about that. It was in 1970. How? 40 years ago, what year was that? 1972, yeah. I wasn't here actually. One chilly morning. You can imagine how chilly it is. The double-decker bus arrived in Melbourne. Madhavisa Swami alighted with an enthusiastic team of brahmacharis, all dressed in new saffron cloth and wrapped in matching brown chuddas. They were on a special mission to stage Melbourne's first Rath Yatra parade. Although something new for Melbourne, Rathiatra was one of the world's most ancient festivals. So in the temple, I guess this is Burnett Street at this stage, 72. The devotees by this stage were worshipping Liberata and Krishna. We celebrated their installation last year. Since time beyond memory, the celebrated deity of Krishna known as Jagannath, Lord of the Universe, had been honoured with a great chariot parade at Jagannath Puri in Orissa at the Bay of Bengal. Every summer, millions of pilgrims gathered from all over India to join in the awesome and magnificent celebration in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead graced everyone, high-born or low, pure or impure, rich or poor, with his presence. When he left his palatial temple and travelled in state to his peaceful summer retreat, the deity of Jagannath memorialised Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he manifested himself in Dwarka 50 centuries before. In fact, we're reading in the Bhagavatam Krishna's departure for Dwarka. There, as part of his personal pastimes on earth, Lord Krishna had reigned as king in dazzling splendour and revealed the unsurpassable opulence and majesty of his Godhood. Srila Prabhupada had been particularly enthusiastic to establish the worship of Jagannath in the West. As he explained in one letter to a friend in India, when we first start a temple, we start with Jagannath Swami. My Guru Maharaj recommended temples of Jagannath in these countries because he is kind even to the malechas. Excuse me. Since 1967, ISKCON had staged the ancient Rathiatra festival in many cities of the world. More recently, it was scheduled for London, Pittsburgh, Calcutta, San Francisco, Tokyo, and Melbourne. May and June 1972 saw devotees work tirelessly on the multifarious aspects of Rathiatra: fundraising, purchase and acquisition of materials, publicity, planning the actual parade, hiring a hall for after the parade, and organising a feast for thousands. Mother Lisa was well aware of the enormity of such an event. He had helped organise the 1969 and 1970 Rathiatra festivals in San Francisco. Prabhupada was convinced that the festival was an important part of Krishna consciousness culture. He had personally told Mother Dwisa that the parade itself was so spiritually potent that just by following the chariot of Lord Jagannath as it passed down the road, one would be liberated from repeated birth and death. That's a relief. No. Mother Dwisa also had his own special personal experience of the potency of the Rathiatra festival. It had first attracted him to become a devotee. Mother Dwisa inspired others. Vaibhavi, now an accomplished artist, drew up plans for the cart from studying pictures of the massive chariots on Jagannath Puri. Vaibhavi designed these gates and the columns and the temple, the deity room. After corresponding with Nara Narayan, who had designed the first carts in America, she came up with a specially scaled down version that would fit into a single Melbourne traffic lane. Notable also would be a special custom-made mechanism to lower and raise the silken canopy to avoid the overhead tram lines that spanned the city streets. Vaibhavi decided on the final colour scheme, the position of the colourful blue and white swan motifs, the size of the deity platform and the location of the fencing. She tended to even the smallest details, the dimensions of the spire, the design of the kumbha, the parrots, the length of the flag, and even the angle of slope for the multicoloured canopy. Work began under extreme weather conditions. The Melbourne winter of 1972 was a severe one. What's the winter of 2012 like? Huh? Not so bad, huh? We've gotten used to it, maybe. A vacant lot in Carlton was donated for the duration of the construction. Devotees laboured day and night. Sometimes unknown men and women would turn up on the rugged, muddy site and volunteer their services for painting or construction. Once an old staggering drunk insisted on holding a kerosene lamp for hours so the devotees could work through the night. To the devotees, it seemed that Lord Jagannath, Krishna, the Lord of the Universe, was personally causes he engaging these persons in his devotional service. Some of these men and women became inspired, so inspired that they actually became devotees. And where was Lord Jagannath? A rough yatra parade held no meaning without the smiling, angular-faced deities of the Lord and his brother Balaram and his sister Subhadra. Deeper. One grey, overcast day I was out driving when I came upon an old sawmill. There I saw a huge seasoned log of hardwood lying on the ground. I purchased it and had it cut into three pieces, then drove them back to the newly acquired Hare Krishna shop in Little Lonsdale Street and set them up in the chilly loft. The Lord had come to Melbourne. Dwapayana, I had a desire, and one day it was fulfilled. Vaibhavi asked me if I would like to help carve Lord Jagannath. I was thrilled and honoured. Deepak came back from the sawmill with three logs, and we carried them upstairs to an area partitioned off from the mighty Apollo Gymnasium. Mighty Apollo was, he used to pull trams down Bourke Street with his teeth. They'd drive trucks over him on the South Melbourne beach. He was a strong man. We started with a chainsaw and then continued with hand tools. Deepak carved Lord Balaram and I carved Subhadra and Jagannath as Dwapayana. Finally, Nataki painted them. Deepak, I remember daily entering that freezing loft. There was such a holy atmosphere. Atmosphere. Each morning we would come and offer our obeisances to the unfinished deities and then commence our work. It had such a powerful effect on us. To this very day, I have a deep attraction to Lord Jagannath. Prabhupada's recent advice to Shyam Ananda had inspired him to use his artistic talents more fully in Krishna's service. Shyam Ananda did all of the pictures in Prabhupada's room. Very talented artist. He designed a poster to advertise the forthcoming festival. The purple and black placards were soon mounted on every available wall space around Melbourne, advertising a 5,000-year-old festival, singing, dancing, feasting in celebration of the Lord of the Universe. The poster also detailed a dance drama to be held in a downtown church hall after the parade. The history of the dance drama, the first of its kind for ISKCON, was an interesting one. Only weeks before, a leading dancer from the Netherlands Dance Theatre, currently touring Australia, had purchased one of Srila Prabhupada's books from a devotee on the streets of downtown Melbourne. After reading the book, he had suddenly defected from the troupe in mid-season and moved into the temple in St Kilda. This had caused considerable shockwaves through the dance world. Bhakta George, also known as George Coleman, who only weeks before was performing naked on stage with the world's most controversial dance troupe, now danced fully dressed in saffron cloth outside Myers department store on Bourke Street. George was both a stunningly expert dancer and an experienced choreographer. This inspired Madhavisa to stage a Krishna-conscious dance drama for Rath Yatra. Madhavisa encouraged Mekala to utilise her classical ballet training in the drama. Soon selected devotees wrapped in coats and gloves were spending long hours rehearsing in the cold loft above the Hare Krishna shop. The little fish, the story of the tiny conditioned soul and his fall to the material world would soon have its debut. 17th of July 1972, that's 40 years ago today. Despite an uneasy relationship with the devotees, the reluctant Melbourne City Council had granted permits for the noontime parade. You know, despite the fact that, you know, half the devotees were being issued with fines for book distribution and they were seen as a nuisance. To attract crowds to the starting point, two devotee couples were married at an authentic Vedic ceremony in the city square that morning. City council officials and police, deeming the ceremony unauthorised and the fire illegal, chased Mohanananda, the officiating priest, a considerable number of city blocks before finally losing him in bustling Saturday morning shopping crowds. It you fancy at your wedding getting chased by the police before you can sign the papers. The event, as well as joining the couples together in holy matrimony, had also succeeded in drawing even larger crowds to the busy city square, a focal point for the festival. You know, that's that area on the other side of the town hall, on Collins Street. That was the city square. Under bleak midwinter skies, the Ruthiatra parade rolled down Collins Street. Although granting permission, the local council had insisted that the double-decker bus be hitched to the cart as it edged down the steep grade, just in case the brakes failed. An 11th-hour accident had almost cancelled the parade. The back axle had bowed only hours before commencement. But miraculously, after hasty repairs, the parade reached the city square only a little late. There the devotees and guests had their first glimpse of Lord Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra, who were standing 120 centimetres high and smiling mercifully from their chariot. A gigantic feast was offered to the deities in front of the Melbourne Town Hall. Then the colourful chariot, accompanied by joyous chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and cries of Jai Jagannath, all glories to Lord Jagannath, rumbled along Swanson Street. Many onlookers, young and old, were swept up in the spirit of the event and joined the devotees in grabbing the strong red ropes to heave the massive chariot along the road. The wheels were wooden, solid wood. Devotees threw date and coconut sweets to the eager crowds. The joyous festival ended at a hall in Lonsdale Street. Devotees and guests alike appreciated the full-length drama and were moved to dance and chant blissfully at its resounding finale. The LSD Fog Light Show Company pumped out psychedelic coloured images on the walls amidst coloured slides of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada as the chanting grew in intensity. Finally, everyone feasted on a multi-course prasadam feast, spicy carrot sabji, papadams halva, date balls, coconut honey balls and apple chutney. The first annual Ruthiatra festival was deemed a resounding success. Carrot sabji, yeah. Doesn't sound very good to me. Anyway. The appearance day of Lord Jagannath in Melbourne. But here's a very interesting letter from Prabhupada that came a couple of days later. Regarding your question of dancing show, whatever it may be, it may not deviate from the real Krishna consciousness program. We are Hari Kirtan men, that's all. Very interesting letter from Prabhupada. We can attract people by some gorgeous show, but inside there must be strict purity and seriousness. Otherwise, we shall be attracted by the gorgeous show only. There are two energies always working simultaneously. And Maya means when we diminish the spiritual energy, then automatically we become attracted to the external dress of Maya. So I do not care very much for these plays and dramas unless they are coming directly from the Vedas. If we can recite from Bhagavad Gita the first chapter without any need for elaborate scenery or stage props and gorgeous dresses, that is best. Just like your Shakespeare, Macbeth may be recited by two men without anything else and simply by their acting ability and the meaningful words alone, they can very easily capture the entire audience and give them real substance. We have so many stories like Jagai and Madai, Krishna departing for Mathura, like that. Satya will not help us. Our message is very grave. And because it is the absolute truth, it will work without any artificial presentation. Because they heard of our program in Bombay along with the Zaburi sisters, Manipuri dancers here in London, they had arranged one program of lecturing by me along with a recital by one man playing the veena, just to attract attention to my speaking. I am not in approval of such arrangements, and it will be a dangerous thing in the future if we begin this type of program just to attract the masses. Interesting. Prabhupada wanted quality, not quantity. Isn't it interesting? And he wanted people to be attracted to spiritual substance, not material show. Interesting, huh? Already I see this happening practically all over the society. Woo. So better we stop it now and get ourselves firmly on the track chalked out for us by Lord Chaitanya. We are simply Sankirtan men. Our program is chanting, dancing, distributing prasadam and speaking high philosophy. That's all. What do you reckon? Good letter? Something to think about. Yeah. Then Madhudvisa wrote back reporting on the successful festival and explained the event. And then he was thinking of staging a play based on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Then Prabhupada said, I'm very glad to hear that there has been a very nice Ratha Yatra festival in Melbourne and that despite all obstacles many people joined and it was very successful. Similarly, in London, we have already celebrated a very successful procession and many thousands of persons joined in marching from Marble Arch to Trafalgar Square. Then Prabhupada says, regarding the dramas, my point is not to deviate from gravity and compromise or distract from the situation. Keep this point in vision and continue. This is a very good proposal to stage one play based upon Lord Chaitanya. Read teachings of Lord Chaitanya on the stage, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving instructions to Sanatana Goswami. The actors may speak a little philosophy without the need for special costumes or other things. Then kirtan. There must be always kirtan. Dialogue, kirtan, then again dialogue, again kirtan, again repeat like that. No humour should be there, just philosophy and kirtan. Prabhupada knew the Aussie's propensity for a bit of a yuck it up. And if it is successful, then the same dialogue kirtan may be followed by other Sankirtan parties in Europe and America. All in all, however, Prabhupada appreciated Mother Dweesa's service. All blessings of Krishna are upon you. You have done so nicely. Keep always in your vision that our movement is so great and keep gravity. You are experienced devotee. I can see things are going nicely. You know what Prabhupada called Madhudvisa Van Swami? You know what he called him? Anybody know? The Emperor of Kirtan. So that's how much Prabhupada appreciated his service. Anyway, Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai. Any comments? Questions? I've gone on a bit long, so.
Was there another one that Prabhupada was on?
Later. Yeah. Ooh. Sorry?
What happened to the
Ratha Yatra carts? When we joined up, there were bits of the Ratha Yatra carts still lying around. In the backyard, in the book shed. There was another shed there before. I think that was knocked out. It was originally a stables. Out the back, and there was a shed there, and because I remember seeing the blue wood with the swans painted on it, and. I think eventually it was discarded. There used to be, there was, you know that orange Vyasasan that you see Prabhupada sitting on in the town hall programs? The seat and the back of that was also kept for some time as well. There were a number of things, but eventually they got, you know, they weren't being used and they were discarded. Comments? Questions? Complaints?
Do we have some pictures?
Pictures of what?
The theatre?
Yes, in the slideshow there's some... Corma's got pictures. In here there's a picture, isn't there? I don't know whether there are pictures of that first Rathiatra, you know. I don't think there are. No. But I have seen pictures of... Colm has got them. Of maybe the second one. It could be the first one. You know, the devoted Dwapayana and Balaram, isn't it? Carrying Lord Jagannath. Not in this book, but there are some pictures. We'll have, in 2015, when we're going to have the 40th, our 40th anniversary celebrations will be the installation of Gaudiya and, you know, the consecration of this temple. We'll have a slideshow. We'll get all of those pictures together. Corma's got many of them. Most of them. All of them. I'm reading. I was just looking. It doesn't have a picture of Jagannath. I reckon we've got one at home.
I've got one of the second one, the Prabhupada one upstairs with one of these. Yeah.
Okay, let's finish here. Kantarashana Pagutam Ki Jai, Sarakal Pad Ki Jai, Gaura Bhakta Binda Ki Jai.